My name is Peggy Dominique, and I am on the phone with Phil Brown. In the February-March 2004 issue of the Mountain Astrologer magazine, Phil Brown wrote an article entitled Shakespeare, Astrology, and Alchemy. And I want to start with something you said in this article. You said, Shakespeare was adept at creating cosmic imagery in his writing with his plays as a way of showing that human behavior should mirror the ideal order and harmony of the universe. For example, Cassius says in Julius Caesar, the fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves, that we are underlings. Then Julius Caesar goes on to say, in Julius Caesar also, if I could pray to move, prayers would move me. But I am constant as the northern star, of whose true fixed and resting quality there is no fellow in the firmament. Of course, in the first case, Cassius is talking about stop blaming the planets for your problems. And then in the second case, Julius Caesar is saying he's not really a very changeable human being. Am I right about that?
Yes, yes.
What century was it?
He was writing in the early part of the 17th century, late 16th century, so from 1594 till around 1610.
During that time, wasn't astrology set in stone? You know, there was not much flexibility?
Very much so. It was definitely before we got into the current sort of psychological astrology where there's lots of flexibility and so on.
Explain to our listeners, how is astrology used now by astrologers with psychology?
Astrology has come to find a place very much today in a kind of a personal astrology where people use astrology and use their horoscopes and sun signs and so on to analyze their lives, to analyze themselves. Situations in life. It has taken on, especially with the outer planets, Neptune, Pluto, has taken on a real psychological resonance. That's a very modern trend in astrology, and it's helped to popularize it and make it something that is that a lot of people want to look at.
And during Shakespeare's time, though, that it was not used that way, except he did. In his writing, he used it often like that, didn't
right.
he?
Right. Such a fascinating question that you're raising. It's really excellent because Shakespeare, to just kind of give a short answer address to your point that you're raising, to your question, is that Shakespeare essentially took many, many things in the Elizabethan culture that were static and, to borrow your phrase, set in stone, and gave them imaginative fluidity and transformed or transmuted these static elements into something that was living. And if I can refer for just a moment to a famous book that was published about 30 years after Shakespeare died called Christian Astrology by the preeminent astrologer of that age, William Lilly. And in this book, we have kind of a record of what astrology was back in Shakespeare's day. And what it appears to be was just exactly what you're saying. It was very cut and dried. It was used primarily for forecasting events and for a whole branch of astrology called horary astrology, which is asking questions like, where's my lost purse? And when will my spouse return from sea? Things like that. And the rules and directions for applying those concepts of astrology were pretty cut and dried. One example of this would be in just looking at this book, Christian Astrology. William Lilly is talking about the sun. And, you know, when we look at our sun sign today in an astrology book, we're going to get all kinds of personal insights. But he's talking here about it, and he says, well, you know, the sun signifies kings, princes, emperors, dukes. And he has a list that must be 50 words long here of people who are signified by the sun. It also signifies pimples in the face, palpitation, trembling, infirmities of the eyes. I mean, it goes on to colors and plants and so on. And these would all be things that would be of interest to somebody who's trying to answer a question of where's my lost purse. And if the sun shows up in a certain place in the chart, you know, they go look under the, you know, under the front porch to try to find it. So what Shakespeare did is he took this rather formulaic astrology, and he gave it an imaginative, metaphoric quality. And, of course, he always, many references in his plays, that you, such as the ones you cited from Julius Caesar, reference astrology. but he also used astrology in more metaphoric ways as well. There's a fascinating new book that just came out on Shakespeare called Will in the World, subtitled How Shakespeare Became Shakespeare by Stephen Greenblatt. And in this book, Stephen Greenblatt does not touch on astrology and Shakespeare, but he shows how Shakespeare used so many things that were static elements in society and gave them a life on the stage that totally transformed them into something that was living and breathing and changing. One example that Stephen Greenblatt uses are the old morality plays that Shakespeare grew up with, which were the plays where characters represent qualities, characters named vice and riot and iniquity and so on. And so Shakespeare grew up with this kind of very formulaic type of theater in which characters were really set in stone. And you find him adapting in his plays some of the qualities of the morality plays, but using them in ways that just transformed. He made characteristics metaphors for characters. So the classic example is Richard III, in which Richard III's physical deformity is a metaphor for his inner grotesqueness. Shakespeare had a few characters who were actually had morality-type names, Time and The Winter's Tale and so on. The point of this is that he could take something in the culture of the time and totally transform it into something that it wasn't before, and he had this ability just basically across the spectrum of culture. And Greenblatt makes a point in his book that Shakespeare was essentially the ultimate sponge. He absorbed everything and put it through kind of a garlic press of his imagination. And from this solid, these solid elements in society, he pressed it through his imagination, and out came these wonderful dramas and comedies and tragedies that he employed metaphor. That includes would include astrology also.
Going back to Julius Caesar, probably if Shakespeare was alive today, he would be called a conspiracy theorist. You know, Cassius says in Julius Caesar, how many ages hence shall this our lofty scene be acted over in states unborn and accents yet unknown?
Oh, yes. Oh, beautiful. Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, what he's commenting on there is that they are basically celebrating this assassination by coating their swords in blood.
And
pretty
also,
chilling, actually. Yeah, every time I've read those lines that you just cited there, it just gives me chills, you know, to realize how much almost of a prophecy that turned out to be.
Right, unfortunately. Now, let's go to Romeo and Juliet. And you said something very interesting in here about the Egyptians. You mentioned how the early Egyptians believed that when people died, they were elevated. Let me see, where did you write this? For example, Juliet says about Romeo, give me my Romeo, and when I shall die, take him and cut him out in little stars, and he will make the face of heaven so fine that all the world will be in love with night. And you were mentioning how the Egyptians believed that when people died, they became stars.
The culture at the time that Shakespeare was writing was heavily influenced in many ways by a series of writings that had come out of actually ancient Greece, titled Hermes Trismegistus, Mercury Thrice Great. And these writings purported to bring a very occult Egyptian outlook or imprint on things, where plants, for instance, would have, you know, certain mystical qualities. Friar Lawrence even uses that in the play. And so the point was to show that Shakespeare was influenced by these writings. And as was much of the culture at the time, there's some wonderful books by a woman named Frances Yates, and who I cite in the article. And she wrote several books in which she demonstrated that much of the nature of culture at the time, there was a very occult imprint on the culture at the time, and that Shakespeare had absorbed this and was using this in his plays. But he, again, taking that Shakespearean imagination that he had, saw the beauty of this that he could use in Romeo and Juliet.
And also, he must have been very well read. He must have read everything and been very open-minded.
Oh, tremendously. And In fact, in this book that I mentioned before, by Stephen Greenblatt, Will in the World. He says there that Shakespeare had an astounding memory, which is evident from what he's put into the plays, and that everything that he ran across in his life stayed with him. He almost had a photographic mind, and just scraps of conversation, pages that he read here and there, everything that just kind of stayed with him. And so he was widely read, and he was also blessed with a memory which just didn't forget. So whatever he ran across stayed with him.
You also mentioned in the article that you believe that Juliet was a Leo, and that Romeo, because there's a lot of reference to a fixed star, Sirius, which is 13 degrees Cancer, that he might have been a Cancer. Is that true?
Right. That's right. Romeo's more of a lunar character, and Juliet is more of a solar character ruled by the sun. And there are lots and lots of references in the play to support the fact that Juliet and her family were very leonine. Juliet's cousin, Tybalt, the name Tybalt is from Tabby, the cat. The name Tybalt is associated with the same root, and there are other references in the play as well. And Romeo is associated with the fixed star Sirius, which was actually considered at the time to be like a second sun in its brightness and rising in the summer. There are several references in the play to dogs and the mouth of a dog, and the fixed star Sirius is in the constellation Canis Major, which is a dog constellation, and the fixed star Sirius is placed in the mouth of the dog in the constellation. And so when Romeo enters the tomb to find Juliet, he thinks she's dead, and so he goes into the tomb and he's going to kill himself, and he refers to the tomb as a mouth, as an open mouth with light shining out of it. He's also referred to in the play as the dog's name, and Tybalt calls him a dog of the House of Montague. So there's some references in there that kind of indicate that he was associated with a fixed star, Sirius, and that this was ruled by, the position of this was in Cancer.